Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. This is a community information call. It is not intended to create an attorney-client relationship. Whatever we say here remains merely an informational conversation. Okay? When you do speak with me, make sure you are comfortable with the fact that this call is being recorded. If you want to conceal your identity, feel free to do so. Here's what I'm planning to do. I want to get started with a very quick overview of what is involved in EB3 to EB2 conversions. Then I want to answer two sets of questions that were posted on this issue in our community conference call from August 30th. I had told those two gentlemen, let's meet again in a week and we can discuss it again. So I'll answer their questions first. I already have them. And then I will open the call to all questions. Okay, if you have any follow-up questions, we'll finish them up. Well, that said, let me begin. What is this idea of EB3 to EB2 conversion? Most of you know that EB3 for countries like India, China are very, very backed up, and EB2s are better. Actually, the rest of the world also EB2 is much better. So sometimes, even though you have obtained a labor certification, PERM certification, and then you obtained an I-140 approval or you are on the path to that, you feel like, oh, maybe I should have filed under EB2, or maybe circumstances have changed and now I can file under EB2. Okay, so in those cases, when we take the priority date from an EB3 case and put it on top of an EB2 case, thereby essentially converting an EB3 case to an EB2 case, we refer to that loosely as a conversion. Really, it's not a conversion. It is a new case filed under EB2, and essentially the priority date is being transferred. One relevant question here is, can priority dates be transferred if an employer revokes my old I-140? And the answer is yes. Department of USCIS has said that they will allow transfers of priority date, carryovers of priority dates, even if the old I-140 is revoked, as long as the revocation is not for fraud. Okay? So when you do this analysis of EB3 to EB2 conversion, first question you want to ask yourself is, am I currently qualified for EB2? Why is this question important? Remember, green card is for a job in the future, which means today I'm working as a programmer, tomorrow's job could be project leader, and even though I continue working as a programmer for the next 3 years or until I get my green card, it is not a problem. The future job of project manager can be given to me once the green card is approved. Or before that, it's up to the employer. But it's not required. So the idea is, green card is for a future job. However, you must be qualified for it on the date you file the PERM application. So let's say you have 3 years of experience after bachelor's degree, and you know that the green card is going to take 3-4 more years. Can you file under EB2? No, because today you're not qualified. You may be qualified in 2 years or 3 years, but that doesn't mean you can file an EB2 right now. Okay? So are you currently qualified for EB2? One of the recommendations I have is for people who are not qualified and don't have the 5-year experience or have a 3-year bachelor's degree, you may want to consider doing doing a master's degree online. And I have a video on this, a recording on this. I think it's in my blogs. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's in my blogs. That tells you how to choose an appropriate online master's degree program that is accredited and that will help you get into EB2. Okay? Next question you want to ask yourself is, do I want to process my EB2 case with the same employer who petitioned the EB3 or some other employer? It's a little bit easier to do it with another employer, but given a choice between going with a totally new employer and going with an employer who is totally solidly behind me, who's going to, you know, pay the attorney's fees, expenses, this is a considerable expense, you know. If they are on my side, they want to cooperate fully with the law, then, of course, I would stay with the same employer. Okay? The next question you have to ask yourself, do you need a promotion, present or future? What does that mean? Well, what if you have 3 years of experience before you joined this employer and you want to process your green card through this employer and you've got 2 years with this employer now? Now you've got 5 years, but 2 years are with the same employer through whom you're going to file EB-2, who also did your EB-3 earlier. In order to use that experience, you must be offered a job which is more than 50% different than what you were doing before. Let's say the old job was all coding. The new job is mostly providing project management. So that's a promotion. And then the experience that you gained with this employer can be applied towards your EB-2. I hope I'm making myself clear. Most of you already know the concepts, but still I want to put it out there so that you are sensitized to the issues. You can ask your lawyers the right kind of questions and make sure that you know your case is being properly approached. These concepts are difficult. They can be complicated, and even we can make mistakes. Lawyers are not, you know, perfect, as all of you know. So, you know, be educated and take your lawyer's help in making these decisions. It's very important that you must have a bona fide job. What does that mean? If you have a 3-employee company, okay, and the employer says, well, I'm going to give you a promotion, that's a little bit difficult to establish and believe, okay? It can be true, but it's, you know, if you are a 300-employee company or a 3,000-employee company, probably a better case for a promotion, okay? But, of course, it all depends upon the facts of a case. I'm just giving an example. This does not necessarily mean that smaller companies cannot process promotion cases, okay? How do I eliminate the risk of problems with EB-3? What does that mean? Hey, I already have my EB-3 approval. I don't want to do anything that's going to mess that up. Well, what you can do is you can make sure, and I took the example of a programmer under EB-3 who wants to go for project manager under EB-2. I took that example. So, if your EB-3 was for a programmer, make sure you continue working as a programmer until the I-140 for the new case is approved. So don't change jobs, because if you take a promotion to project manager, then somebody could question, government could question that, you know, this guy's already taken a promotion. Why would he come back to the lower job, which is the green card job? So don't take a promotion until the I-140 for the new case is approved. That would be important. And the last issue I want to touch upon before I start answering the questions posted and then start answering your questions is, what if I used AC-21? This is a very tricky situation. Think about it. You are one of the lucky ones who's got your 485 pending. I-140 is approved under EB-3. You changed from IBM to Sun Microsystems. You changed employers. Okay. Your job was programmer. Now, for AC-21, the job that Sun gives you has to be the same or similar to the job IBM gave you, okay? So it's got to be a programmer or thereabouts. So let's say you move from programmer with IBM to programmer with Sun Microsystems. Now, the problem here is this. In order for Sun Microsystems to process your case under EB-2, they have to assess whether they have to promote you so that an EB-2 level job can be given to you, or can they use the same job? This can be tricky, okay? So for AC-21, the key question is, can the same job, which was the subject of AC-21, be used to file an EB-2 case? Tricky question, depends upon the facts of the case. All right, I'm done with my small presentation that took about 10 minutes. Let's get into the questions that these two gentlemen had posted. First set of questions was from Somu, okay? These questions were posted in our August 30th community conference call. He says to me, I have a 485 pending on EB-3. I have been with my company for 12 years. They are planning to apply for EB-2, same company. I have a bachelor's 4-year engineering degree from India. can I qualify for EB2? Yes, if the job that is being offered to you is sufficiently dissimilar from the EB3 job. Is there any audit risk? No. Filing for a conversion, again I use the word conversion loosely, does not create any additional audit risks. If we apply in EB2, will my EB3 application processing stop? No, it does not stop. What happens to the EB3? It goes on. Don't take a promotion. Okay, I just mentioned that. My wife is working on EAD. Will her EAD be affected? No, not at all. No problem at all. If I get EB2 I-140 approved, can I use EB3 priority date? The answer is yes. At that time, will I get another EAD from EB2 processing? No. What you do is you take the EB2 I-140 approval and put it on top of the existing 485. So your old I-140 gets knocked out, and the new one now sits on top of your 485. So 485 does not have to be refiled. Okay? Next set of questions was from Mani Ramasamy. He said, and gentlemen, both of you, Somi and Mani Ramasamy, thank you for being patient because I could have answered these questions last time. I just wanted to answer them all collectively in one context so that we cover this whole topic exhaustively, okay? So he's preparing his I-140 for EB2. Can this be done premium processing? Sure. Do we have to specify the pending EB3 case information? You will have to. Because if there is an I-140 approved or pending under the old case, you have to mention that. There is a question, I think, in there. Should we do it during the I-140 filing? Yeah, on the form itself, there is a question. If there is only a labor cert pending, there is nothing to say. But if you are doing, if the I-140 is either pending or approved for the old case, you have to say it in the new I-140. Third question, when I started filing for EB2 case, attorney mentioned not to file AC21. You see, I think that's a personal choice. I like to file AC21, and then I like to assess whether I would need a promotion case, or can I go ahead with the same AC21 job for EB2. Okay? So, I don't know. I would let your lawyer decide that. I don't know your case. Should you file AC21? Should you not file AC21? I can't really comment about that. Okay, very good, guys. I'm done with my presentation. I had budgeted about 30 minutes for this call. If we go a little bit over, that's okay. We have a good 17 minutes left. So anybody who has any question, press *5. Or is it 5-star? Press 5-star on your phone, guys. Press 5-star. Oh, I wasn't expecting this many callers. I thought this was going to be only 2 or 3 callers. Okay, no problem. Press 5-star. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 questions. 6 questions. 6 people have raised their hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. Okay, let's get started. I'm going to start in the order in which people had called in. 1 second, okay? Hello, can you hear me? Area code 408.
Yes, Rajiv, this is Umesh here, but my question was related to H1 to F1 conversion, so not EB2. So should I just wait or should I just ask the question?
I cannot answer those questions, Umesh. An EB3 to EB2 conversion call.
Okay, no problem.
To stay on, if I have time, I can try to answer your question.
Definitely, ji. Okay. Ji.
All right. Let me go on to the next one. Area code 484. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Rajiv. I did spoke to you in our previous call. So the question is, EB3, EB2, right? You said in your previous calls that INS usually runs the sweeps, right, to take the oldest priority date.
That's fine. Let me clarify. Hang on. Let me clarify this for everybody. What is being said is this. It is my understanding USCIS does not require us to do anything special to transfer the priority date from one case to another. What they do is they do system sweeps, which is basically a database query, several times a month, during which they decide who is entitled to what earliest priority date and the highest category. So they'll automatically give you the earliest date and the highest category which you're eligible for. Go ahead, please. Your question?
So Raju, my question is, how will I know, or is there a way I can know that what is the date attached to my current?
What we do is, after a few weeks, we try to call the customer service and see if we can find out. Many times we can.
Okay, but by checking the logging in with online login, I don't think we can see if it is updated or something like that, right?
Customer service.
Okay.
All right.
Yep. And just follow-up question, Raju, in case if it is not updated, can we request that or?
No harm in sending a letter, yes, of course.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Area code 347, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Nicola. I called you last week.
Okay.
And we spoke about how to request, evaluation for my degree from the ARCAO. Now, if that is not going to work to be considered as a master, my actual school in Italy, April 2014, I will have 5 years experience after my bachelor. Now, how long do I have to wait after April 2014 to apply for a B2? The other question...
Once you have 5 years of progressively responsible post-bachelor's experience, you can file your perm. So perm takes 4 or 5 months to prepare. I would say about 4.5 years... after your bachelor's, you can start your perm preparation.
Okay. The other question was about the conversion. Like, if my company starts an EB3, let's say now, so they're going to file around January or February, and then they do the conversion in EB2 in the 2014, does the date of the approval of the I-140 count for the EB3, or everything starts again from the 2014?
Yeah, that's what I said. The date you file your perm application is called your priority date.
Uh-huh.
That's your place in the queue. What happens is, when you have an EB3 priority date and you get an EB2 approval, then your EB3 priority date is converted to EB2.
Okay.
So, let's say if you started your EB3 case in 2012 and then you got it approved to I-140 stage and then you started your EB2 case in 2014, it will be considered to have the priority date of 2012.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know. Yeah. Thank you very much for your help. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. Okay. I have a hand raised by somebody who does not have... a phone number. So maybe you are calling from a voice over IP. You called 1229. Hello?
Yeah, this is Somo.
How are you? Go ahead, please.
Hi. Yeah. Just a follow-up questions on my questions list. Few clarification on the audit risk. So you mentioned that there won't be any audit risk for applying EB2.
Let me clarify something.
EB3.
Let me clarify something.
Yeah.
Between a person who's filing EB2 in the IT industry without conversion and a person who's applying with conversion, there is no difference in audit risk.
Okay. And will there be any difference between in the promotional case, if I am applying EB2 in a promotional, will that create more questions, more audit risk?
It does create an audit risk, but it does create an additional explanation as to
mm-hmm.
how the two jobs are more than 50% different. So that is something that has to be handled very carefully.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, so 50. Okay, 50%. It has to be 50% different from my EB3 job description, right?
More than 50%.
More than 50%.
Right.
Okay, I think that's it. Yeah.
Flexible. Okay. Second last. Area code 614. Go ahead, please.
GWT. I was actually wondering, job conversion, Kelly, the thing you're talking about, you know, you've been progressing a little bit in your career, that it's up to the new company and their attorneys to figure out if you fall under that or not.
Let me understand the question. Your question is whether or not to file under EB2, is it a decision that is between the employer and the lawyers? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, yeah. How do you, I know you gave some hints as to what are the things you're looking at. So
what we do is typically, you see, we, when our firm gets hired, we represent both the employer and the employee. I want both my clients on the phone. When I make a decision, help them make a decision as to best course to follow, I want input from everybody.
Okay. But in your particular case, basically, the attorneys will be able to let you know if your case is going to be successful.
Yeah, they should be able to assess. They should be able to give you their opinion about what the risks and rewards.
Okay. Okay. And if you end up having to do the master's at this time, it's like, what, 2 years or something?
Right.
So if you look at the dates, that's what I'm trying to understand. It's probably going to take at least 2 years to do a master's, right? And I think my filing is from 2007 when then they opened it in a mass, at a mass level. So then for those dates, if I
look,
do a
stop
master's
right there.
Now.
Stop
okay.
right there. There is no way to predict the movement of EB2 and EB3 dates. There are some comments from the Department of State from yesterday. I will probably make a quick video of that as well. I'll do it tomorrow.
Okay.
If I were you, I can only tell you what I would do if I were you. Knowing the law and knowing how things are going, I would definitely go for the degree. Why? Well, if I complete the degree, excellent, I've gained a degree, I have another way of accelerating my green card. If that does not help me and my green card comes through, I have another degree in the works. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
So I have everything to gain, not much to lose.
Okay.
That's the way I look.
Okay. So this, okay. I get it, yes.
Good luck to you.
Thank you, Rajiti.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, last question. Area code 704. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Rajivji. This is...
Hello, sorry. You got cut off there. After...
Rajivji, can you hear me, please?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Yeah, this is Mani Ramasamy. Just confirming for the second question, during the 140 itself, I have to specify 485 information.
Oh, absolutely.
For the pending.
No question about it.
Okay.
Absolutely, you have to.
Okay. It looks, I mean, last Friday, I signed the new 140, I mean, new cleared up labor certification.
In the I-140, if I remember, there's a question. Has anybody filed an immigrant visa for you? That's an I-140. So you have to give the information of the old I-140.
Also, I have to give old 140 as well as old 485 also, along with the new 140 application?
I don't remember about the 485, whether there's a specific question there. But I-140,
okay.
There is definitely a question.
Oh, okay. So in the new I-140, I have to specify the old 140 information also.
Yes, sir, you do.
But this is different company. I don't know if I have. I think I got just a copy of the old 140. Or what other information do I have to specify?
Well, you actually just need the receipt number or the case number. Don't worry about that. It's not that big a deal.
Oh, okay. Okay. I will mention. So nothing to mention about 485 at all.
I don't remember the form, sir. Last time I filled the form was 25 years ago.
Okay, sure. So last Friday I did that. I hope they haven't filed it. If they filed it, is there anything that I can do, or it will not merge at all?
You can always file an amended I-140. No problem.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay. So again, the third question, yeah, he mentioned that because this is a new company and new job, we don't want to file AC-21 at that time because, you know, we are going to file new case. It may interfere. Will that be a problem or?
See, I don't want to second guess anybody. I don't know the facts of the case. I don't like doing things like that. I like to file the AC-21. Everybody is different.
Okay. But if we don't do it, I mean, if we didn't do it, it shouldn't cause any additional problem.
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Okay, and one more last question, sir. So if the new 140 gets approved, is that still that once or 6 month period still applicable, like the new employer can also withdraw the 140?
Not sure I understand your question.
Like, generally after the 140 is cleared, they have to stick with the employer for 6 months. Is that, is that applicable for the new case also?
There is a very interesting legal issue there. Very, very interesting legal issue. I would say assume that you have to stay. I think you're asking me about AC-21. I would say assume that you have to, well, it's a very interesting legal issue. Assume that you have to stay there 180 days. But if you don't, I think you're going to be okay, but let's not take a chance with it.
Oh, okay. Sure, sir.
Okay?
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm done with all the questions that were asked. Let me go back to the 408 gentlemen. Sir, you had a question about F1 to H1. Go ahead. This is the last question I'll be answering.
Rajiv, H1 visa is getting expired on September 20th,
okay.
And my employer filed for a labor just on September 1st, a few days ago,
okay.
And now he says if I can buy time for another month or something, then he'll get this labor moved to the next stage and he can file for my H1 extension. So I was planning to go to a local college here and get an I-20 to prepare for my GRE, something like that, a community college here. Not a community college, an institute here who issue an I-20 for on weekly or monthly courses. So I was wondering if this is right for me to do or should I just pack up and leave?
You know, in my view, there is no point in staying in USA for a non-essential degree or a non-essential course. Okay? Again, this is more a counseling advice than just a legal observation.
Yes.
If I were you, I would ask myself, why do I want to stay here? There's no guarantee. This might take 6 months, 8 months, 1 year. Before you get to the next stage, what are you going to do? Just keep going to college unnecessarily? Might as well go back to your home country and go work there. Remember, your employer can outsource you work there. There's nothing illegal about that. So if they want to send you some work there, fine. If they don't, go get yourself another job. When the time comes, they can apply for your H-1 extension. Only one thing bad about this, but two things bad. One, if you've been outside USA for 12 months, you might be subject to the H-1 quota. I use the word might because there are some issues here when you have extensions beyond. So one problem is you are subject to the quota probably, and second problem is that, let me think about this. So you have left USA, you're working there, your green card is going, ability to pay wages becomes an issue, okay? That's another issue you need to discuss with your employer. So basically, to make the decision to leave, you have to leave. There's no question about that, in my view. Same issues arise whether you stay here or you go outside, other than the quota issue. So what you should do is sit down with your lawyers and figure out, do the cost-benefit analysis. I personally think you should leave U.S.
Sure, Rajiv. Thanks for the... I had made up that mind, but I was like still uncertain if I was doing the right decision. And One more question, Raju. Like, since my visa is getting over on 20th, is it okay if I fly out on 18th, or is it okay, or should I leave a little earlier?
No, you can leave before the I-94 expires. Actually, you have 10 days grace period after I-94 expires. Okay.
Okay.
But what happens is sometimes on their I-94, when they issue you the I-94 at the airport, sometimes they add the 10 days to the period you've already been given. Make sure you don't have that. So compare your I-94 with your I-797. If they are both the same date, then you have 10 days.
Yes. In fact, I don't have any stamping. I didn't leave. So I just have the paper which has the same, because I didn't leave and I didn't come back, I don't have an I-94 other than the one which I was on the document.
Then you have 10 days to leave U.S.
Okay, all right. Then I'll book the tickets accordingly, Rajiv. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you, Rajiv. Rajiv, sorry.
Oops, sorry. I'll bring you back on 1 second. What were you saying?
Sorry, Rajiv. Just one last question I wanted to ask was, is there anything else that I have to be careful about, like other than just book and leave? Or
see, from your perspective, I don't see any problem, but you know, there are a whole lot of issues that the employer has to keep in mind. They should get together with their lawyers. You should also talk with them about the continuity of the green card, ability to pay wages issues, things like that. Okay?
Okay.
Anything else I can help you with?
Thanks a lot, Rajiv. Appreciate it a lot. Thank you.
My pleasure. Good luck, sir.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, two more people have raised their hands at the last moment. Guys, okay, these are the very last two people I'm doing. One of them, the voice over IP, Somu, is that you?
Hey, Raja, this is Somu again. Sorry. You mentioned that for EB3 to EB2 conversion, you mentioned that it is easier to apply with a different employer. Why do you say that? What is that?
Because, you see, let's say if you need to use the experience that you have gained while working for the EB3 employer. If you change employers, you don't have to do a promotion. You can use that experience.
Okay.
Also, it might be a little easier for a new employer to offer you an EB2 job than the same employer to offer you an EB2 job. Just a matter of, you know, again, it all depends upon the facts of the case, generally speaking.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Good luck. Okay, guys, the very, very last question. 704, go ahead, please.
Sir, it's Mani again. Sorry about that. I applied the EA for EAD, I think, sometimes last month. In case if the new one has been approved before the old one gets expired, will I be able to continue to work?
Yes, sir. As long as your EAD is valid. Remember, your EAD is tied to your 485, and we are not changing your 485. So
right.
Keep renewing your EAD in a timely manner.
Right. So that was my question. So the EAD I got applied a little late, but the old one supposed to, it expires on September, 24th or something. In case the new one doesn't come before that, will that create any problem?
You have to stop working until the new one comes.
Oh, so I have to inform the employer, so they should not pay?
Should not work during the time you don't have any EAD.
Okay.
Unless you have an H1.
Do I have to inform anything to INS or just not work? That's all.
You don't have to tell INS anything. You just have to.
Sorry?
You just have to stop working. There's nothing else to be done.
Until the new one comes.
That is correct.
Okay. Okay, sir. Thank you.
Good luck. All right, folks, thank you for being here. I'll see you next week for a general community conference call.